This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, it's Dave Marchese with you, and for this week's deep dive, we're getting into an issue that really brought out a big response from the hack audience over the past few days, and it's this issue of whether trans women could be about to be banned from competing in female categories at the Olympics. It's a really emotional and at times pretty hurtful debate. A lot of commentators say that's because it pits important questions about what is inclusive against questions about what is fair. It's also an argument that's been going on for a few years now, but it's right back in the headlines this week because the International Olympic Committee has a new president. And since this president started, she's been steering things in a bit of a different direction. On one side of the debate, you've got people claiming banning trans athletes, trans women, is about protecting women in sport.
From now on, women's sports will be only for women.
And then on the other, you've got people saying the ban is completely unnecessary and that it's transphobic.
Why are we making a sweeping ban over trans athletes, citing that it is a danger to women's sports, when only one trans woman has ever competed in the Olympics before?
In a bit, you're going to hear from a doctor who can explain the science behind all of this. But first, hack reporter Ali Angeloni has this update.
The next Olympic Games are about 3 years away, but there's a big debate already about who'll be allowed to compete.
A step closer to a big decision, but no decision yet.
And now there's this.
Transgender athletes could be banned from female events at the Olympics by the LA Games in 2028.
So right now, the International Olympic Committee is figuring out what its rules will be for trans athletes. And media around the world has been reporting that an IOC expert is warning of a permanent advantage to being born male. So, is there a ban coming? Let's back up a little bit. Earlier this year, the IOC elected its first female president, Zimbabwean Kirsty Coventry.
The IOC president, Kirsty Coventry, had campaigned on a platform of essentially wanting to protect the integrity of women's sports.
Pre-Kirsty Coventry, it was up to individual sporting federations to decide whether trans athletes could compete. But in June, that position changed. The IOC would now take the lead on setting eligibility criteria. Then, in September, the new president launched something called the Protection of the Female Category Working Group, made up of experts and representatives of international federations. The IOC was given an update on that work last week. An IOC spokesperson says,
"The working group is continuing its discussions on this topic and no decisions have been taken yet. Further information will be provided in due course."
Under current rules, trans athletes are allowed to take part in the Olympics. New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard was the first openly trans athlete to ever compete in the Games at the 2021 Tokyo Olympics.
"I'm just so grateful that I've had the opportunity to come here and be me."
Last year at the Paris Games, there was a lot of attention on gender in the women's gold medal boxing event, won by Algeria's Aman Khalif.
"I'm a woman like any other woman. I was born a woman. I have lived as a woman. I compete as a woman."
Khalif has since been banned by World Boxing until she undergoes genetic sex testing, something she says she'll appeal. Zooming out, though, there's another shift happening. In the US, the President Donald Trump has banned trans athletes from competing in school sports.
"Not allow men to beat up, injure and cheat our women and our girls."
And with the next Games in Los Angeles, he's also saying he won't allow transgender athletes to compete.
"From now on, women's sports will be only for women."
Following that, the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee has also changed its rules.
"President of the United States or the United States government is threatening to take away all of the funds. Like, how can you fight against that? Money talks."
World sporting bodies are reviewing things too. Both rugby and athletics have banned trans women from elite competitions, while World Aquatics only allows athletes who transitioned before the age of 12. This year, there's also that genetic testing in boxing, and it's coming in for athletics too. For trans athletes like Canadian hockey player Harrison Brown, it's a hard time.
"Why are we making a sweeping ban over trans athletes, citing that it is a danger to women's sports, when only one trans woman has ever competed in the Olympics before?"
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. And yeah, look, a really contentious issue. There are so many opinions on either side of this debate. But what does the science say? the studies that have been done, the research? Well, Dr. Ada Chung is an endocrinologist who leads trans health research at the University of Melbourne. She knows all about this issue. Dr. Chung, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Where does the data, the research that people are basing decisions on, where does that come from? Like, what research has been done?
There is a lot of claims that limiting trans people's participation in sport is all about fairness and protecting the women's category. But if you take a bit of a step back, the broader issues that are affecting women's sport, such as pay inequity, media attention, access to training facilities, don't actually get any attention from people who purport to want to protect women's sport. And so when you actually look at the science, it's important that we actually ask the right question. A lot of people will say trans women are biological men and men shouldn't be competing in the women's category. Now, men shouldn't be competing in the women's category. That's true, because and that's why we have sex segregated sport, because men have high testosterone concentrations and women have low testosterone concentrations, and testosterone drives performance. But the difference is that trans women who are on gender affirming hormone therapy have hormone levels the same as cisgender women, and they have biological characteristics and physical characteristics that are often no different to cisgender women. Now, the research in transgender health is not very advanced. It's an area that's been quite taboo, not well funded, and so the existing research that's out there has limitations. But despite the limitations, there is data that shows that very, very few trans people participate in sport compared to the general population. There's data that shows that after starting, for example, feminizing hormone therapy, trans women achieve a body composition, so a proportion of fat mass and muscle mass that's no different to cisgender women, and that physical performance reduces after starting feminizing hormone therapy, and as does cardiorespiratory fitness and lung function. But there are some parameters that may not reduce. So there are some parameters such as maybe muscle strength, hand grip strength, or knee extension strength that may not reduce to that of a cisgender female level. But then there's other research showing that things like fitness is actually even lower than that of cisgender women.
I guess, yes, some of the issues that people might raise in this discussion are stuff like having, you know, bigger hands, bigger feet, height, stuff that hormone therapy may not be able to change and may give an advantage in some sports, like if it's basketball or if it's volleyball, as opposed to something like equestrian where there may not be an advantage.
What's relevant? You're absolutely right. Depends on the sport. So something like equestrian is going to be very different to something like basketball or long distance running. And so whilst there are things that hormone therapy doesn't change, like hand size, height, the muscles powering that height is reduced compared to before gender affirming hormone therapy. And so I often give the analogy, it's a bit like a four-wheel drive being powered by a little hatchback engine. So whilst the height may be no different, the cardiorespiratory fitness driving that body frame is reduced. And so what we need to look at actually is the overall performance. We need to look at competition results like physical performance. How do trans women, after starting gender-affirming hormone therapy, compare when it comes to competition, when it comes to sporting performance? And that depends on the sport. And we need to compare that to the ranges of cisgender women and cisgender men.
Do we also need to be considering whether a person has gone through complete puberty? Like, does that make a big difference?
Oh, it does. So, you know, if a trans person has had puberty blockers as a young adult and has never even experienced, you know, a male puberty, then the effects of testosterone on height, on skeletal frame is not going to occur. And so I think it does matter, but you know, when we talk about these nuances, there's very little research in the space.
Got a lot of messages coming through. Alex from Brunswick says, this protecting female athletes rhetoric is such thinly veiled misogyny and transphobia. Why don't they do the same for male athletes, is Alex's comment there. Another person says, there are advantages across the board to being born a male, height and strength, for example. In my opinion, it's not fair on cis women in sport to have a trans athlete competing against them. Someone else else. I think uneducated politicians are leading policies that affect people they have no idea about. And then another person saying, why can't they just make more gender categories, which is something we've been hearing a lot of. And I might ask you, Dr. Ada, in a bit, but you were saying before there is very little research in this space. And I feel like that is something that everyone can agree on, that we need more studies. We need more data.
That's true. We don't have the studies that are rigorous, but there is research to give you an idea. And if you take all the research that exists and the limitations that are present, there is a reduction in physical performance after starting gender-affirming hormone therapy over about 2 years. There's a reduction in endurance with hemoglobin. There's a reduction in cardiorespiratory fitness.
So if there is a lag time there of a couple of years maybe for hormone levels to drop or athletic performance to level out a bit, should there be some kind of waiting period? May that be a solution?
Yes. So it depends on what sport. Community sport and elite sport is very different. But for elite sport, where the stakes are high, there's money involved, there's careers involved, there absolutely should be some eligibility criteria. What that is what the science is trying to answer. What should the eligibility criteria be?
Do you think science will ever give us a perfect answer on this, Dr. Chung?
There's always going to be inferences that we need to make based on the existing research. As I said, ideally, we would have research on elite trans athletes competing in individual sports. Like we'd have research on cricketers who are trans women who undergo gender transition compared to cisgender women, cisgender men, and people, trans athletes who are swimmers. But that's never going to happen because there are so few trans athletes playing sport, let alone competing at the elite level. The barriers are immense. And so I don't think we're going to get that sort of data anytime soon. And so we're going to need to make some judgments. We're going to need to make some judgments based on human rights laws, what the science currently shows. What do we want for sport? What do we want our sporting federations and sporting organisations to represent? Do we want sport to be for everybody or only for a select few? What we've seen is we've seen bans on trans women competing in the female category. And this actually has flow-on effects to the broader cisgender female participants. We've seen World Boxing and World Athletics insist on every single female athlete having a sex test before competing at the elite level. Like, there's a lot of debate. Is that ethical? Who's going to be gender policing who gets to compete in sport? We're fueling panic around a tiny number of trans athletes, and the restrictive policies actually have flow-on effects to the broader population.
What do you make of this idea of having open categories in competition where athletes who may be trans or intersex perhaps would be able to compete? Do you think that that is a viable option?
I think World Swimming tried to implement that, and when they did, there were no competitors.
Are there other genetic advantages that people might have that we may not see but may be giving them an advantage?
Humans are so diverse. We have diverse wingspans or like hand sizes. If you look at people like Ian Thorpe or Michael Phelps, we have different physiques. We have different compositions of, you know, slow twitch and fast twitch muscle fibres within our muscle competition. And these confer certain advantages in certain sports, but we can't control for every single variation that there is in human diversity. And so it's quite crude. We only group people based on sex, so female and male. And because humans are not just binary, there are, you know, people who are intersex or have variations of sex characteristics, and it's very hard to box people into only two categories. We do our best, but it's imperfect. To completely ban the people who don't fit neatly into these two boxes, I think it's a really difficult decision and difficult choice to make.
And just finally, Dr. Chung, as someone who works in this area of health with trans people every day, what kind of impact do these discussions have on the community?
These sort of discussions fuel hatred, they fuel violence, and they cause significant harm to the trans community, impacts on minority stress, impacts on anxiety, on mental health. And it's because there are many large, well-funded organisations who target trans people in sport because it's an easy way to stir fear and push a broader political agenda to roll back not just trans participation in sport, but trans participation in public life.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to have a chat with us. Dr. Ada Chung from the University of Melbourne, appreciate your time.
Pleasure.
Yeah, it's a big issue that so many of you had big opinions on. And remember, if you do need support, if this has raised anything for you, Lifeline is always there on 13 11 14. There are particular services, specific services for trans people as well that you can find, chat services, phone lines, and they're worth looking up too. It is something we're going to keep you across, and we're going to bring you the latest when we have the information. If there is confirmation of a ban, that could be pretty soon, because there have been reports in the last few days that if there is going to be a change, it'll be unveiled ahead of the Winter Olympics that are happening in Italy early next year. But that's all we have time for on the Hack Deep Dive today. I'll catch you next time.